I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Keith Hutchings. Welcome, Keith.
Welcome, Michael. Yes, it's lovely to be here. It's such a beautiful building.
We're in the old customs house in Fremantle. They don't build them like this anymore. Keith, there's some natural lighting coming through. We shouldn't confess to this. There's some fluorescent lighting up there above us. But you, amongst all the other things you do, are terribly interested in good house design, probably. So you don't have to have any lights on in the house. You don't have to turn the heating on and you can enjoy life. Tell me about it.
Well, the ideal thing for me is to be in a house that throughout the day you don't need to turn any lights on. There's windows, there's skylights. It's naturally bright enough to see what you're doing, but also that the house be warm in the winter and cool in the summer. I often ask people a question when they say, you know, why would I want to do this? Say, when your energy bill arrives each month, if it's bigger than the month before, do you get excited because it means you've won? Now, no one has ever said yes to that, which I find quite strange, because the way our traditional houses are designed, they're designed to be really expensive to keep comfortable. As I mentioned, the average household, 40% of their energy expense is keeping their house warm in the winter and cool in the summer. And if a house is properly designed, that energy expense will almost completely disappear.
But there's so much in good house design. You want a place to feel livable. You want to be connected with the outside world. You don't want to be bricked in particularly, and of course these days cost of living is going up, as you say, you can bring down your energy costs. But let's just go back a step or two. How did you become interested in all of this personally?
About 8 years ago, I left a job which was no longer serving me, and I was looking around for what I was going to do next. It was the kind of job I expected to do until they carried me out in a box. And I decided that everybody had to do something about climate change and that my thing was going to be housing. And I looked at the standard of housing that's being done in this state and I thought, this is an easy sell. Because once you've been in an energy efficient designed house, you really don't want to be anywhere else. And so it seemed like a no-brainer that, because I'm lazy. So I was looking, you know, some people want to solve climate change with, you know, massive changes of government and things like that. I was looking for something that would be really easy.
Well, you want people to live sustainably, and is that the basic point?
Well, that's kind of where I started. But then I realized that we could drop out all the climate change-y stuff and all the environmental things and all of that. And if people know that they have the option, that they could be living much, much better than they are now, and at the same time be accomplishing the goals of my hippie friends. Again, that 40% of the energy expense. So a well-designed house, you're essentially having your energy demand. And in this state, 90% of our energy comes from fossil fuels. So trying to change that, but that's my hardworking friends as opposed to the lazy ones like me who just want to change the way we build houses here. And so we could have our fast fossil fuel consumption just by designing our houses better.
Now, there's a group of you who want to, in that sense, preach particularly to people who are about to build a house about how they should design it. And you're going to be having a bit of a fair, or how can we describe this, at Murdoch University in early December. Tell us about
that.
Well,
so that's the Future Housings Expo, and that's the 4th of December in the Bush Court at Murdoch University. And what they'll be there is the service providers to this end of the housing market. So if you are not one of those people who wants a really high energy bill so they can beat all of their neighbors by spending more money, then, and you're thinking of either building or, you know, doing substantial renovations, then you can come around, because the people you're going to be working with who are building your house, it's really a personal relationship. It's almost like a marriage. You get married for 2 years to your building designer, your builder, your architect, whoever's creating your house. And so part of what the Housing Expo is about is to give people a chance to come through, you know, meet a couple of builders, because there's it's a small event. This is the first time we're running it, but there'll be a range of service providers there. And you can, you know, meet two or three different builders. I can work with him. I can work with him. Can't work with him. He's a Docker supporter or a whatever the other one is, supporter. And so you can't obviously have anything to do with them.
Well, I'm glad you don't know the name of the other.
The other, they who must not be named.
Now tell me, is this world of design a very male-dominated thing? Are there many women who are bringing their creative energies to bear on design?
All of the builders I know are men. There's about half and half, I'd say, in terms of building designers. There's a lot of women working with interior design. Interior design is a really important part of this, because the curtains you choose, because part of what you want to do in the summer is keep the heat out of your house, and window coverings are an important part of that. There's town planning, and planning design is an important part of getting, particularly when you're looking at something that's a little bit different. And a number of the town planners I know are the building planners are women. So there's not as many women in the industry as I would like to see, but it's changing and getting better in that.
Let's talk a little more about what some of the basic points are that you'd want to get over when it comes to designing a house. A lot of people who get caught in this area say, well, the first thing, going back to basics, and you mentioned town planning, is making sure that if we're building new subdivisions in Perth and Fremantle and beyond, we should get it so you can face north and be able to use the sun, particularly during the winter. And there's a whole lot of other facets. We don't seem to design new suburban lots, or in our older ones like Fremantle, is often not enough room for trees. We've got a new tree canopy policy being developed in Fremantle and beyond. But what are some of the key points that you need in place to make this work?
Well, there are a couple of different answers to that. So that is it depends. If you've got a building designer you can work with, they can make a lot of adjustments to how you are. Ideally, what you want is a east-west orientated block with a north-facing aspect, so that you can put the living areas on the northern side of the house. But if you're in a situation where you own the block and you've got none of those things, there's a couple of different ways to work around it. Some of the houses I've seen, they've turned the house 45 degrees onto the block, so that then can create a living area that faces to the north. There's also a design process called passive house. And basically the way they work with that is they seal the house as an airtight unit. They call it, you know, designing it like an esky. And then they bring air into the house with a unit that's called a heat recovery, I never remember these, but initialisms. And what that does is it brings the outside air, so in winter, the cold outside air, it pushes it through like a radiator, which exchanges the heat that's inside the house and warms up the air that's coming into the house. And then at the same time, it's pulling the air out of the wet areas. So you create, you're constantly pushing new, fresh, not carbon dioxide laden air into the house and pulling the moisture out of the kitchens and the bathrooms.
Does that present itself as an alternative to having a classically solar passive house?
Exactly. So it's perfect for urban blocks where you're built, and it has the advantage of not being able to be built out. I worked in a house that was a three-story, it was actually only a two-story house, but because they'd done very tall floors, it's always good gesturing on an audio experience, but here I am gesturing, tall house, and they had completely shaded the next door neighbor's house, which was clearly built as a passive solar house with big northern side windows and the whole thing. And they were just getting no sun at all because this fake French provincial house had been built on the neighboring block. So that's always a risk. And so that's the other thing you want to look for when you're buying your block, is hopefully is a block that can't be built out along that side, because that's always a risk. They come in, somebody builds, you know, a three-story brick McMansion next door to you, and you get nothing.
So if you had the two or three story faux structure and you'd bought that by mistake, Keith, could you reduce your energy power bill by 40%?
At that point, probably not, because first of all, what you often get with a three-story house, you know, the modern style is to do an open staircase up to through the house. And what it creates is a chimney. I have some friends who have a house in Coogee. They abandon the third floor in the summer because it can get up to 50 to 60 degrees up there, because it's just pulling all the heat of the house up to the top floor. And they would actually need breathing gear to go up there, because once you get up above 50 degrees, your autonomic nervous system shuts down and you have to remember to breathe.
So let's visualize. I've just arrived at the at Murdoch.
Yep.
I'm going to build this house. I'm taken with what you're telling me. How will the process work on the day?
Well, it's basically, as you described it, it'll be like a fair. So there's going to be some speakers. I know Peter Newman is going to be speaking. There's a few other people. We haven't nailed down the speakers just yet, so I don't want to speak out of turn and get myself in trouble again. So the first thing I would probably do if I had already bought the block of land is I'd go see Kim Wilkinson from Silver Sage. He's an energy assessor, and I'd go and have a chat to him, take my plans along, and show them to him, and he can start talking a little bit about how I might use that block of land. And then there'll be a couple of building designers there, so I'd probably wander over and find the building designer who supports the right sports team. I don't know, the person I can work with, talk to a couple of them. Now, some people want to go directly to a builder, so there'll also be a couple of builders there. And these are builders with a proven track record. The problem with things like passive solar is they're not protected terms. So I can tell you that I can build you a green home, having never built one before in my life.
This is like free-range eggs. You have to get your definitions right, don't you?
Exactly. So you want to talk to someone and say, can I see some pictures? Can I talk to your
And they'll have the visuals?
I'm sure they will be, because they're, you know, these are people who have displayed things before. They'll also, now if you already own your house, but you'd like to make it more energy efficient, again, you'd start talking.
That really is an important thing, particularly around Fremantle. We don't have large new subdivisions, although the heart of Beaconsfield proposals, starting with the redevelopment of the old TAFE site, will we'll have new buildings, and no doubt the state government and Development WA will be thinking hard about this.
Well, hopefully. You know, we have the WGB development. There's some beautiful houses in there that are...
provide a model for a lot of this, and they've got, you know, battery supply and people buying into all sorts of things. But if you've got an older home, let's say in White Gum Valley, and it's not on the east-west orientation, being able to use the northerly sun, but you want to find out what you can do with this old house, you can sit down with someone at the fair.
So that'd be a great place also to talk to Kim. I really like Kim, and he really knows his stuff. So he can, if you've got your drawings with you, you can say, well, what do I do with this place? Or he can later come out for a ridiculous fee. He just doesn't charge enough. Hopefully he won't listen to this and raise his prices before I want to use his services, but very reasonable fee. And then there'll also be some people who do that kind of renovating and retrofitting work. It's a matter of, really the thing you want to do if you own the house is get somebody to come out and look at it and look at what is the worst problem and go from there. So my house, I'm in a 1960s brick venereal in Kublup, and the worst problem is the guy who renovated the house before we bought it, I'm pretty sure he took every window and door down and leaned them up against the wall for a couple of months because every single one is warped. So what you want to do is limit the exchanges of air in your house. So if we heat up the air, we are probably exchanging 20 to 30 times. I mentioned the passive house. They're looking for one air exchange an hour. So the little leaks around the place, you actually change over the full air in your house every hour. We're probably doing that 20 to 30 times, which means I heat up the air, and 2 minutes later, I'm heating up a new set of air. So that gets very expensive. So the first thing that we really need to do is look at our windows and our doors, because they all leak. And I've done some of that with weather seals and things like that, but really need to do more of that in our house.
Does this mean that, in one sense, an ideal home to meet these requirements of yours is a little bit like the locks with a canal? You've got a series of compartments within a home. You're making sure that the cold air doesn't infect the rest of the house, or the hot air doesn't infect the rest of the house. Is that the approach you're taking?
Well, it's really between the inside and the outside of the house, because depending on what time of year it is, we've gained a dog.
So it's the inside and the outside that you're particularly worried about?
Yeah, it's in the summer, it's keeping the sun out of the house. So people often do that with, you know, shade sails and things on there, because you want to keep the heat, that sun's heat, at least 5 meters away from your walls and particularly your windows. And then in winter, it's keeping your warm in. So curtains, and particularly curtains with pelmets on the top, so that box on the top.
So the 60s pelmet is making a comeback under those designs. And curtains, you no longer have big glass doors that you can open up and walk in and out of.
Well, a lot of the houses I'm in will still have that, because to me, in ideal design, what you are doing is both facilitating the... Here in Australia, most days of the year, you can spend time outside. There's probably only 3 or 4 days, maybe 5 days in the summer, where it's too hot to be outside. And in the winter, it would be a strange winter where we had more than 3 or 4 days where it just rains all day. So you want to be able to use that inside and outside, and of course connection with nature. And then the other thing that good design does is it facilitates connection between people. I got in a bit of trouble. Again, someone put up, there's a website or Facebook page called My Efficient Electric Home, and there's a lot of discussion. People put housing drawings up on there. So someone put a drawing up there and they said, you know, how could I make this drawing more energy efficient? And I wrote, and you'll find this very surprising, I would only build this house if I hated my wife and children. Because the house was designed in a way that it separated everybody. There was a rumpus room. I don't know what that is. I think it's an American thing, but we don't mention it. There was a theater room, and there was a third room of no apparent purpose, so that the children and the parents would never be in the same room at the same time. And, you know, by that design, probably both parents would never be in the same room together. Good design facilitates connection. It brings people together. So that's part of this kind of idea of sustainability is because the largest disease facing Australia, and it's probably the whole Western world, is social disconnection. So good design connects us with the outside, it connects us with nature, and it connects us with our family and our community.
So in that sense, you want livable space. You've mentioned the Americans, Keith, and I detect a New Jersey accent there somewhere. Tell me this though, tell me this. Are there lessons to be learned from living in a cold climate like the US or Canada that are transportable to the Australian conditions?
I can't really say that much because, well, I lived in New York City before I moved out here, and I had no interest in housing. I worked in I lived in an apartment, I worked in the city. It was really only till I came out here that I started, but I look around when I go back to visit my family, I look at the suburbs, and there are certain things, but for the most part, houses have been built with no interest to orientation. It's a strange, I see a lot of houses here also that are built perfectly backwards. So they're built with the, here we want, the sun is to the north, or somebody put it towards the equator or sunwise. I like that term, sunwise, that sounds lovely. And my next door neighbor was a classic example. They put a carport all the way down the northern side of the house. So they will never be warmed at all by the sun. And there are no windows down the northern side of the house. There was one and they filled it in. But the idea that you could walk into a house and it's just warm, I mean, every European I speak to says the same thing. When I tell them what I do, they say, why are your houses so cold here? And they all say it the same way. It's a very strange thing. I spoke to a woman whose family was from Canada. And so family came out, her mother lived in Brisbane. And these are Canadians, so they're supposed to be used to the cold. And it's Brisbane, but it's winter. And they're saying, why is this house so cold? They couldn't believe it. So we've been sold a bill of goods as to what our houses should be like and could be like.
Now, Keith, we'll draw this to an end. We're going to encourage people to get along to this expo, and there'll be some more data, more information with this podcast as to where, when, how, why, and all of that. But you also have a nice website where people can go and look at some of these things. What's that?
So the website is The Comfortable Home Project, and what I've got is a series of interviews with people who are currently living in passive solar houses. Can I get away with telling the Kim story that I
I think you should.
So, because So there's two stories that I tell people about so they know what they can have. So first, really bitterly cold day in June, and I go out to do an interview in a house with Kim, who's the energy assessor. And it actually hurts to stand outside. There's this breeze coming straight off the Antarctica. And I step inside, and it's almost a little too warm in there. So the first thing I do is take off my jacket. And who does that in an Australian house? They actually take off their jacket. And I turn to Kim and say, Kim, have you been running the air conditioner? Because he does have one, because he's in his 70s, and so, you know, fair enough. Most of the people I interview don't even own an air conditioner. He's got an air conditioner. He says, no, that's just the heat from the sun from yesterday. I'm like, right, okay. And we're filming, and I look over, and the whole film crew has their shoes off because the floor is so toasty warm. And I'm trying to look respectable, so I've still got my shoes on, and I'm a little pouty about that. But then there's the other side. It gets hot here in winter. In summer. I went to North America for a minute. So Christmas Day, it was 42.3 degrees here in Perth. Someone asked on a social media post, how are people in passive solar houses going? I was like, thanks. So I emailed all the people that I've interviewed previously, and six of them got back to me. The average temperature inside the house was 25 degrees. One of them had an air conditioner. All the others didn't have air conditioners. They all said they didn't miss it. And the one person who had the air conditioner ran it for an hour in the afternoon. Now, there was a week in February that it was over 40 degrees every day. Now, in that week, you'd probably miss your air conditioner. You'd want to have one. But I'd rather live in a house where I run the air conditioner 8 days of the year. You know, maybe there's 3 or 4 days, a stretch in winter where it just doesn't warm up, the sun never comes out, and you want to heat the house up a little bit. And maybe there's 5, 6 days in a row in February where the house, you want to cool it down a bit. But I don't know. I'm a bit weird. I'd rather run an air conditioner for 8 days than 300.
Keith, there's no doubt you're going to encourage a lot of people to get along to this expo. I'm certainly going to get there. It sounds like fun. There's a group of practitioners. How many of you?
Well, right now we are seven who have been, I think there's a few more that have been working on setting up this expo. And so that's the Sustainability Practitioners Network. And there'll also be a link on this. And so we're organized, we're a not-for-profit organization that are organizing this event. And part of this is to look to grow to that organization so that people can, if they're thinking of building or they're thinking of renovating, they can do it better.
Lovely talking to you, Keith. Thanks very much.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. I'm really looking forward to seeing everyone who listened to this. Please come and introduce yourself. I'll be easy to find because I'll be wearing the brightest shirt in the bush court.
See you, Keith.
See ya.